A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey listeners, just a quick note, we recorded this episode before current events, but hopefully you'll still be able to find it useful and maybe distracting. Take care. Hi, I'm Talia Vacasis.
And I'm Kim France.
And welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. So on the list of themes we came up with, there was one that I found weirdly exciting, and that is anger. I know I spend a lot of time thinking about anger, which is funny because I probably come off as somebody who's never angry. But I think that's probably true for a lot of women, because from a young age, we're taught to push our anger away. It's invalidated. We're taught it's not welcome. And we're going to talk about that with our guests later in the show. But first, to set the tone, we asked you to send in voice memos about your anger, when you get angry, how it makes you feel, and we got so many good responses. So here are a few of those clipped together. They're anonymous, and I think they're really good.
Now that I'm in my mid-40s, anger feels like one of the emotions I can most easily tap into.
I am 48, and I didn't start realizing that anger was something that I was legitimately feeling until, I think, after I got divorced when I was 40.
As a young adult, I think I still held in my anger quite a bit.
What I'm angry about can be something so petty, like my husband bought salad in a hard clamshell plastic container, and I'll just get so angry because that's what's destroying the earth and there's no reason to buy lettuce in that form.
With age, I also feel like I've become way more insecure, always feeling like I'm not good enough. I don't know if it's social media or if it's just the pressure that women have today that we didn't have years before, but it's just all the pressure, all of it just really gets to me.
I get mad when I feel that I am doing an unfair share of the domestic chores in my house.
You know, how is it 2020 and we're in just such a racist and sexist American culture and society still that does not support families and differently abled people?
I think a lot of my current anger is, you know, focused around the patriarchy. I realized that I was just walking around every day, just like full of what I called the nameless rage. Like, just, like, pissed off all the time.
Anger can sometimes actually feel like a hot, burning rage inside of my body, which feels a little intense.
I grew up in the South. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to be angry. You're supposed to be the person that minimizes situations and be polite.
For a lot of women to see Elizabeth Warren, arguably the most well-prepared, the most hardworking, the smartest person in the race, drop out, it's painful and enraging in its own way, but it's also because when you get over 40, like, we've seen it happen so many times in politics, in business, in entertainment. It sucks, and you just sort of feel like, is anything ever going to change?
Being a white man in the world, like, things are easier for him. They really, really don't feel that at all. So I have to keep explaining it. And it's so frustrating. I am learning how to sit with it and enjoy it and feel like I'm allowed to be angry, and that's okay. Like, men do it all the freaking time.
For me, anger was very motivating and actually quite valuable.
As I age, greater self-knowledge is helping me understand where the rage is coming from, and also accepting it and saying there are really legitimate reasons for me to be angry, and I'm okay with that.
Wow. Weren't those good?
Yeah, they're really good.
I love the woman who said, my anger is focused around the patriarchy.
Yes. What did the other woman say? She called it like her unnameable rage.
Yeah, the nameless rage.
The nameless rage. I kind of love that.
I know. Walking around with a nameless rage. The one that spoke to me too is the one who felt the pressures of domestic life and social media and how that pressure can boil over into anger as well.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think that a lot of emotions like overlap with anger.
The woman also who said that when her husband buys clamshell salad containers and it seems like such a small thing. And it's funny because I get into fights with my husband because if he buys produce, he groups them all together with those little thin sheer plastic bags. Mm-hmm. That's basically just a grouping technique. And I'm like, those plastic bags are so stupid. Like, you can just group your oranges together on the conveyor belt without needing the enclosure of the bag.
Well, the anger isn't about the actual action. It's about, I would think, having to repeat again and again, do not buy the clamshell boxes. Do not use the plastic bags.
And feeling maybe like you're not being heard.
Yeah.
You're not being listened to.
Yeah.
But I also like the Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. No, the Elizabeth Warren quote was great. And I think a lot of women, you know, certainly according to my social media, a lot of women are very pissed off about that.
Yeah. There was also the day that we're recording this is also the day that Harvey Weinstein was sentenced to 23 years. And that felt like a lot of women's anger boiling over.
Yeah.
What are some of the top things that make you angry?
Well, of course, our president. My president, rather, not yours, and his administration. I just feel like every choice he makes is the wrong one. I think he's just evil. Mm. The sexism and misogyny that I see still so many places in our culture, the fact that women are having to fight for the right for safe and legal abortions in the year 2020, I think is stunning. I get angry when I see the success of my enemies, or rather, you know, just seeing bad people get ahead.
Undeserving enemies, yeah.
People who are undeserving or people who are outright bad getting ahead. That makes me very angry. And if I let myself think about him, I can get pretty angry thinking about my ex-husband. How about you?
I like a gloss over that. How about you? Domestic life makes me very angry. I am hesitant to say that it's my actual kids, but just the situations that I find myself in with my kids sometimes make me feel very angry. But also that, like, the Harvey Weinstein situation, the stuff that is coming out every day about sexual harassment in every possible workplace makes me crazy. Little transparent plastic produce bags make me angry. Yeah, I feel like I was an even-keeled person for many years, and now it's just like it's party time for my anger.
See, I feel like I've always been kind of angry, and that I used to be angrier.
Hmm. And now you're chiller?
I'm more chill. I mean, what happened was I can actually remember the event that made me a less angry person. And it has to do with my ex-husband. During our when we were married, I had a very lucrative job, and he worked as a teacher. And so when we got divorced, he decided that he was going to go after as much of my money as he could get. And I was furious about that. We were married 3 years. We didn't have any children. He had, you know, I had my faults as a wife, but he certainly was not present for me as a husband in many ways during important times. And I was just furious. And I was furious that the law was going to let this happen.
Right.
And, you know, that laws that were put on the books to protect women were going were being used, in his case, to get money from me. And I was so furious about it. And I remember thinking, like, I'm going to just go into a spiral about this. Like, this will eat me alive, and I can't let it. And that's when I kind of realized, like, anger is just all the of all the other things it is, and I think it can be a productive emotion in many ways, but I think it can also be a really corrosive emotion, which is why this quote is really good. And the quote is, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
I love that.
It's a really good one. But then, you know, something else my older brother said once, which I can really relate to, is he said of himself, I'm only ever 5 minutes away from anything I've ever been angry about in my life.
Meaning it's so close to the surface?
Yeah, like just like it could have happened 20 years ago, but the anger is still white hot if he just takes a few minutes to access it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's easily accessible.
Yes, I can very strongly relate to that.
I can very strongly relate to, yeah, going from 0 to 100 in no time flat and realizing, like, wow, I was really on the edge for a long time. I loved how some of the women in the clips talked about this realization in the end that their anger is valid, and that they want to take stock of it and be aware of what triggers it and work with it. And so on that note, I have another clip for you.
We have an enormous power in this. We should be making people comfortable with the discomfort they feel when women say no, unapologetically. We can take emotions and think in terms of competence and not gender. People who are able to process their anger and make meaning from it are more creative, more optimistic, they have more intimacy, they're better problem solvers, they have greater political efficacy.
People who are able to process their anger and make meaning from it. That is what I want to bring into the world. I want to be that person. So that's from the incredible TED Talk, The Power of Women's Anger, by Saraya Shimali. And she is our guest today. Saraya is an award-winning writer and media critic whose writing appears regularly in The Atlantic, The Nation, Time, Salon, The Guardian, and The New Statesman. And she also wrote a book called Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger. It was a fascinating and, for me, very clarifying read about anger. We had such a great conversation with her, and so we're just going to jump right in. Here we are with Saraya Shimali.
Can you tell us, Saraya, what does anger do for us? What's the point of it?
So I think the point of our anger is to have us realize that there's a problem. It warns us of threat. It warns us to threats to our dignity, to our physical safety, to our well-being. It's the signal emotion. Anger is very rational. Like, something is happening that requires your attention and that requires you to make change. It's really the emotion that has made it possible for human beings to survive. Without anger, I don't really think we'd be here.
It's a, you say in the book, it's a line of defense against injustice.
And honestly, like, one of the central theses of the book is, why have we made it impossible for girls and women to defend themselves? Because anger is a self-defensive emotion, and yet we have systematically, socially associated it so firmly with men and with male leadership that, you know, we find for so many girls and women that to be angry, they are in conflict with their own sense of femininity and what it means to be a good person.
I was struck by the description of how a man and a woman could be experiencing the same emotion, but in a man it will be classified as anger, but in a woman as sadness. We don't expect anger in women. We expect sadness. Why is that?
You know, a lot of people really do think that anger is a man's emotion, and they incorrectly link that, for example, to the presence of testosterone, which people also sort of incorrectly think is the quote-unquote male hormone. But it also serves a specific purpose, because anger is the language, it's the emotion of self-defense, and we disarm girls and women. We separate this emotion from the idea of femininity. And my question really is, why would we do that? Why would we make the emotion of warning and self-defense and self-protection masculine only? Why would we punish girls and women, which we clearly do, for expressing anger, if anger is the emotion that serves us in that way as a signal emotion to say, hey, you know, there's something wrong and we need to have it addressed. We need to do something about the thing that's wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in Texas. Mm-hmm. I it's interesting. I'm just listening to you talk, and I think that the rap on me always when I was growing up is that I was a sad and quiet child.
Right.
But maybe I was just really pissed off.
Well, I mean, I think what happens to a lot of us is that we learn pretty early on that the anger that we may have is not welcome, that it's not palatable, that it will make us, it will isolate us, it will make us ugly, it will be seen as very bad behavior. We will not be good people. I mean, a lot of girls and women learn that being angry makes them bad people. It makes them bad girls, bad women. And so we take those lessons to heart, you know. I mean, basically all children are trying to do is please the adults about or around them.
This whole conversation is making me so angry.
I'm sorry.
No, but it is. I mean, it makes me think about my girlhood. It makes me think about all the ways in which I was, you know, kind of pushed to be a certain kind of little girl.
Right.
And how infuriating that is.
There is also a particular emphasis on anger being a negative force for girls and women who are white in the culture. So, you know, we talk a lot about stereotypes, and one of the most powerful stereotypes when it comes to anger is the stereotype of the angry black woman. And that is used to police black women and to silence black women all the time, every day, you know, whether they're at work, whether they're political commentators in media, they really don't even have to say anything. They just have to show up. In all of these stereotypes, the thing that I find interesting about the stereotype of white women when they're angry is that they're crazy, right? Like you might, if you're a black woman, you're an angry black woman, which just makes you unattractive and problematic in general. If you're of Hispanic descent, you're much more likely to be dismissed in a way that sexualizes you or that is related to consumption. So she's hot, she's spicy, you know. That kind of
she's dismissive, fiery, yeah.
All of fiery, all of that. If you're of Asian descent, the way that your anger gets mocked or trivialized is more likely to be along the lines of, oh, she's sad, you know, it's more passive description. But if you're white, the depictions in media tend towards crazy. And
right.
It always kind of makes
it's
me,
true.
You know. And it always kind of makes me laugh because the implication is you must be crazy. You have it a lot better than the rest of these women. We could be doing this to you too. You know, I mean, what are you thinking? And so I just think it's the way these things get dismissed is meaningful.
I'm thinking about how often the word bitch was thrown out at me.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's one that gets bandied about a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no end, right? I mean, you sort of go from being a spoiled brat princess to being a hormonal teen to being a high-maintenance bitch to being an ugly nag. I mean, this can go on forever, you know? There's no shortage. There's sort of life stages of slurs and ways of mocking and minimizing women when they get angry. One of the most kind of depressing and startling things that I did find, there was one really interesting study that said, what do you fear the most when you get angry? And it wasn't the threat of violence or professional retaliation. most women said that what they feared was mockery. And that's really, I think, so telling, because we just get used so early to not being taken seriously and to have what we're saying is serious and important be laughed at.
All right, we're going to take a little break here for some ads, and we'll be back in a moment.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to Everything is Fine. We're talking to Soraya Shamali, the author of Rage Becomes Her. What are the expectations around older women in anger?
Well, that they should just be quiet. Like, no one wants to listen to an older woman. That's really the expectation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we look at our older women politicians, they are just endlessly judged for expressing themselves assertively and with dominance and authority. They don't even have to be angry. They have every right to be angry. But when they are angry, there's just a cascade of disparagement. It's almost parodying itself at this point. Like, it just, you would think, hopefully, we would be past this. And we are so not past it.
No, we're not past it at all. And I think everything that's happening right now, you know, in America sort of reinforces that.
And right.
Even just the way that the candidates are reported on, you know, we're more likely to hear, you know, well, this female candidate was terrible to her staff. You never hear that about a male candidate.
Right.
They're expected to be terrible to their staff.
Right. And they also have a lot of women running around doing emotional labor for them that women candidates generally don't. I mean, you know, male candidates, when they act badly, when they make a mistake that hurts people, there's usually someone around who's sending a note, sending flowers, remembering a birthday. And we know this from lots of studies. That's not happening so much for women in the workplace, whether they're candidates or corporate officers. That kind of labor, they're still expected to do themselves.
What about the study you quote that says that the more money a woman spends on grooming, the higher her salary at work
is,
regardless of her job performance?
Yeah, a lot of people interpreted that to mean prettier women get paid more. But that is not the conclusion of the researchers. What the researchers found through a very interesting way that they shaped the study was that women who wear makeup to go, for example, when they go to work, they're well made up and they spend time on their appearance. They're rewarded not because of how they look, but for the fact that they are willing to conform to expectations of gender. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's
fascinating. It made me think of real estate agents, like real estate agents who have to spend so much money on their nails and their hair, and like they always have to look a certain way, and it's that certain way is a real stereotype of femininity.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And You know, there are very few job categories that have changed gender, but real estate agents is one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, one that was traditionally dominated by men, but is now dominated by women. And I wonder if the women in those industries are more likely to go through the process of confirming that they are in fact willing to conform in those ways because they're otherwise threatening to men doing those jobs.
In the book, you also talked about your own struggles with, well, how you feel conflicted by the desire to resist ageism and your love of feminine things.
Yes.
And that's something we talk about a lot on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of sad, and it's a real double bind because while we can celebrate those things that we love and we can understand why ageism is bad, we also know that there are real penalties to looking older if you're a woman. You know, they're not just about feelings. It's about your income and your ability to work and to have your expertise taken seriously. And so it's hard. It's hard to know how to navigate it, when to navigate it, when to ignore it, all of those things. I mean, I think any woman, particularly women in media who, you know, the way you look in media, we know that older women in television are virtually still today invisible. They're just not there. But aging doesn't affect men that way in media because the older a man gets, the more authority he has.
The more trustworthy.
It's horrible.
It's terrible.
Well, you know, it's so funny. This is sort of off on its own little tangent. But this morning I was in, I'm out in California right now, and I took an Uber to go to the studio. And I was like, wait, did I forget to put on makeup? And for about 5 seconds, I had this like hot flash of like real fear.
Right.
That I had like forgotten to like, you know, do this thing I do every single day. Mm-hmm. And I had gone out in the world that way. It was like having one of those dreams that you didn't study for a test.
Right.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you weren't wearing underwear.
That too, though.
Yeah.
What is it about aging that makes us feel so angry?
You know, it's not, I don't even think it's aging. I've decided that, you know, a lot of the stereotypes of women and girls related to anger, interestingly, center around times of real transition for women, puberty, menopause, for example, pregnancy. And those experiences are not experiences that men generally have. And so from the perspective of knowledge that comes from experience, men don't have that, right? And so when we think of hormonal teens or we think of menopausal women who are filled with rage, I think that our ideas really lack context. They lack experience in their description and social understanding of them because those changes change everything for women and girls. Not just their bodies, but all of their social relationships, how they perceive themselves in society, how their loved ones, coworkers think about them, interact with. And so I don't think it's so much aging as a dismissal of the changes that come with all of those transitions. I think we all understand the costs that come with aging for women because they are real. But I also think we underestimate the impact of change and we trivialize what those changes mean.
Right, because they're scary. I mean, they're dark, some of them.
And they're depressing.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the idea, you say that for women, the idea that anger management requires us to exert not more control over our anger, but less.
Right.
And so you say in the book, you want your anger to be purposeful, deliberate, engaging, and change-making. So how can people try to lose control of their anger a little bit?
Well, I don't really like the word control or anger management. The way that I think about it is more in terms of emotional competence more broadly. We are human beings. We have these emotions. We are rarely taught as children how to recognize, think about, and use those emotions, other than with anger, to be told that it's negative and that we should control it or push it down or ignore it, you know, like exactly the wrong advice, frankly, because that never works. It just never works to ignore your anger. And so what I advocate for instead is rethinking our general approach to emotions and emotionality. Your emotions are critical. They're trying to tell you something very important. So what is the emotion trying to tell you? And then what does it mean, which is different? And then what can you do about it? There are many positive and creative ways to express anger that refute the idea that it's destructive and isolating and dangerous and risky. Because in fact, it's probably one of the most social emotions. Anger really requires that you communicate with others 9 times out of 10, and that when you find others who feel the way you feel, you form communities, you form organizations, you form unions, you find groups of friends, you find like-minded people. Forget the stereotypes that you know about anger. Here's a way to rethink anger and what to do with it.
Given everything that's going on in our world at the moment, can a person, and I'm speaking here, of course, about myself, be forgiven for retreating into complete denial? I feel like denial has kept me from losing it over our current president, but I think it's also immobilized me.
Yeah, I mean, denial's interesting because I don't know if I would use the word denial. Denial to me is often it's a protective cognitive response, right? Like climate change is so scary and overwhelming, we're just going to deny it could happen. That sort of thing, right? To me, in the current political environment, it's not so much denial as saturation and the need to care for oneself, because the 24/7 news cycle, just the awareness of how sharp the divisions in the nation are overwhelming. And it makes, I think, a lot of people feel not just despondent or despairing, but so powerless that they throw up their hands. But I also think it goes in cycles. I think a lot of people are going through a massive consciousness raising, and a lot of those people then think in activist terms. But any lifelong activist will tell you that it's a 2 steps forward, 1 step back, do what you can, take care of yourself. I call it a baton exercise. You run your sprint or you run your leg, but then you have to pass the baton and take a break.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember when Trump was elected thinking the way I'm going to get through this is just by keeping my head really deep in the sand for as long as I can, which isn't a very healthy way to live.
Yeah, I don't think that it is a healthy way to live. I think that it will just catch up with you.
I feel like there's also almost the anger that you're talking about when you talk about anger at our political situation is almost more noble than like the anger that I often feel, which is just this private anger in my house. My most common anger is towards I don't want to say towards my kids, but in situations with my kids. And I feel a lot of shame around that. There was an article in the New York Times parenting section that talked a lot about the private rage that mothers feel a lot of the time and how we're not allowed to publicly acknowledge it or express it. And I felt very seen when I read that.
I agree with you. I think the crux of so much of the anger we feel as mothers is that we're allowed to be angry as mothers, again, on behalf of others, like our children or other people's children. But we are not allowed to be angry about the stress and the unfairness of motherhood, of being the default parent, of incurring all the costs that come with caring for children and parents and spouses and households. And to be angry about what, in theory, according to our society, is natural to us brings that feeling of shame. Like, how can you? You must be a bad mother if you're angry about being a mother, you know?
And exactly.
I have to be honest, I don't have a lick of patience for that. Like, when I started feeling that, Do you guys curse on this show?
Yeah.
We do.
when I started feeling that, my basic response was, fucking hell, this is insane. Like, I don't really know what these women around me are doing right now, but I can't do this because this is ridiculous, right? But
right.
There's so much pressure on women to sacrifice themselves for their children and their families and to do this care work. And there's no recognition
yes.
of what that yes. means. And I think that makes us angry. And then our anger is thrown back at us to call us selfish or mean-spirited or unfeeling or callous or whatever, you know? And so the way I put it in the book, and I've written about this before because I really genuinely think this is the case, there's a lot of talk in the United States about motherhood. We love motherhood. But we really, really don't support mothers. We don't care what happens to mothers. If we cared what happened to mothers, we wouldn't have skyrocketing maternal death rates, you know, especially for Black women and brown women. If we cared what happened to mothers, we would have humane health care. If we cared what happened to mothers, we would have work-life parental leave and family leave policies. We have none of those things. We literally are the most cruel and callous society among our peer nations. And so I don't really know any mother that's not angry. But the number of mothers that can admit that they're angry is a lot smaller.
No, exactly. I mean, I live in Canada and I had a 1-year maternity leave, which is incredible. And I've nothing bad to say about that. But once the year is over and you're still trapped in the life cycle of all the demands on you.
Yeah.
What's a way for women listening to frame their anger or to feel like it could be, I don't know, their superpower?
Yeah, I mean, really and truly, I think that it's an incredible opportunity to rethink anger because there's so much energy that goes into anger. And we learn, unfortunately, to use that energy in a way that hurts us. So one of my number one goals in writing the book was I wanted to provide a way that meant girls and women weren't hurting themselves anymore. I just see too many girls and women, and I've seen it over the course of my whole life, who have ended up being sick or tired or really hurting themselves because they were unable to claim their own rights or their own self-defense or say, I have legitimate grievances and I have the right to demand that my society cares for me the way I'm expected to care for my society.
So if this conversation spoke to you or you feel angry and you don't know what to do about it, go get Soraya's book, Rage Becomes Her. And can you tell people, how else should they find you? Is there somewhere else that you would like people to know?
Sure, thank you. I write freelance and I mainly share my work in Twitter, where my Twitter handle is at @schemaly. Also in Facebook, where I have a writer's page and in Instagram. And it's just my name is the account name. But thank you so much for having me today. It was really lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for listening to Everything is Fine. We are your hosts, Talia Bekassis
and Kim France.
If you like the show, be sure to rate it and write us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have suggestions for show ideas or anything else, email us at tallyandkim@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram that is EIF Podcast, and you can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.